Finally, I would like us to familiarize ourselves with the existence of, but not the complete contents of at this point, two important documents, the one of significance for us as members of the United States, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops' Ethical and Religious Directives for Catholic Health Care Services. These are the guidelines that must be followed by any health care institution in the U.S. that wants to call itself Catholic. And I invite you to look at all of these and notice that they do restate the moral principles that we have been looking at in detail. I would like to highlight a couple of points, but again, we're not going to be able to look at this in detail, and specifically, I'm aware that the previous lectures have been rather long, so I intend that this one not be as long as the previous ones. So if we could just drop down to number 45 in the Ethical and Religious Directives, this is again number 3 in the section of this webpage, number 45, in regard to abortion, every procedure whose sole immediate effect is the termination of pregnancy before viability is an abortion, which in its moral context includes the interval between conception and implantation of the embryo. That's very specific, and again, if the purpose of the procedure is to terminate pregnancy, then it constitutes an abortion, whether or not one believes that one is doing it for some good, noble, or even life-saving purpose. We'll see, though, that in number 49, that after viability, labor may be induced, which is not the same thing as performing an abortion. Number 46, even though abortion is prohibited, compassionate physical, psychological, moral, and spiritual care must be offered to people who have suffered the trauma of abortion. And number 47, the very clear statement and, as it were, bringing up to date of what we've seen in Alphonsus Liguori, operations and treatments and medications that have as their direct purpose the cure of a proportionately serious pathological condition of a pregnant woman, such as a treatment for cancer, are permitted when they cannot be safely postponed until the unborn child is viable, even if such treatment will result in the death of the unborn child. So if the mother has a condition that is life-threatening, and the treatment of that condition will have the secondary effect of causing the death of the unborn child, that is permitted. That's not the same as abortion. Again, that's not using instruments or drugs that specifically have as their sole and primary purpose the ending of the life of the child. And number 49, an important point that we'll look at later, for proportionate reason, labor may be induced after the fetus is viable. Now, viability is not a state that can be defined. It depends upon the institution. What are the statistics? Is there present a neonatal intensive care unit where a very premature infant could be cared for? But in general, as we'll see, there are generally accepted definitions of viability, and this would mean that labor may be induced if the mother's condition is, for example, seriously deteriorating. So we'll come back to this point when we look at the issue of prenatal hospice and several other related issues. If we drop down now to the same document, number 5, directives concerning care for the dying, this would be number 55 and following. Catholic healthcare institutions should provide people with appropriate opportunities to prepare for death. People should be provided with the information necessary to help them understand their condition. This is very important in a world that is still attempting very clearly to deny death, even in the wake of the practice of informed consent. Sometimes people will be encouraged to, quote, have the right attitude, meaning they do not look at the fact that they are dying, despite the fact that there is no medical treatment that's actually going to preserve their life or offer them a chance of returning to health. This avoids the necessity to speak about death, and Catholic institutions should not permit it. Number 56, a person has an obligation to use ordinary or proportionate means, and here's a definition. Proportionate means are those that in the judgment of the patient. So the determination of both ordinary and proportionate has to do with the person who's expected to endure this treatment. Proportionate or ordinary is that which offers a reasonable hope of benefit, does not entail excessive burden, or does not impose excessive expense. expense on the family or community, and the person has the right to forego extraordinary or disproportionate means. And again, that definition involves the subjective determination of the individual. Now, number 58, and this follows directly from the statement from John Paul II that we've looked at on nutrition and hydration. In principle, if you've used exactly the same word that was used in that papal document, there's an obligation to provide food and water, but medically assisted nutrition and hydration become morally optional when, and these are not the only circumstances, these are examples, when, for example, they cannot reasonably be expected to prolong life, the patient is very near death, when they would be burdensome for the patient, or would cause significant physical discomfort. And indeed, this is the case if one tries to put a feeding tube into someone who's no longer capable of absorbing nutrition. All that you do is not prolong their life, but actually give them really nasty diarrhea, which is a very bad thing and even a torturing thing to do. So they conclude that as a patient draws close to inevitable death, even measures to provide nutrition and hydration may become excessively burdensome and therefore not obligatory. And number 59, the free and informed judgment made by a competent adult concerning the use or withdrawal of life-sustaining procedures should always be respected and normally complied with unless it's contrary to Catholic moral teaching. And as we've seen, moral teaching involves a quality of the individual's own moral assessment, a level of conscience that is often difficult or impossible to interpret on the basis of simply something that is written down on an informed consent document. And number 61, a reminder that medicines that can alleviate or suppress pain are certainly able to be given to a dying person, even if this indirectly shortens their life, as long as the intention is not to hasten death. And there's an encouragement in number 63 of organ and tissue and other body part donations. The Catechism of the Catholic Church is a very important teaching document that I'm sure all of us will be using, and it's helpful to note how it summarizes, and here again we will be looking at these texts again, but just for us to be aware of the fact that it summarizes most, if not all, of the principles that we've been looking at the historical development of. Numbers 2268 and 2269 are a reminder of the principle of double effect, that unintentional killing is not the same thing as directly intending to bring about death. On the subject of abortion, there's a reiteration in Numbers 22:7, a restatement of what we've already seen, a reminder of the Church's history and the consistency of teaching in regard to the fact of abortion being forbidden from the very beginning, a description of formal cooperation and the canonical penalty, which is associated with this, the automatic excommunication. And then if we drop down to the section on euthanasia, and in particular, number 2278, here is a very explicit statement, the discontinuing medical procedures, and here are the categories that are burdensome, dangerous, extraordinary, or disproportionate to the outcome can be legitimate. And there is in number 2279 a specific encouragement of palliative care and a definition of this kind of care, treatment of symptoms, provision of pain control, not an attempt to cure illness. This is a special form of disinterested charity and should be encouraged. So, this is just a reminder of the fact that these documents, the bishops' description of and collection of texts, for hospitals and other healthcare institutions, their ethical and religious directives, and the texts of the Catechism represent very helpful summaries of the principles that we've seen, and these are extremely useful to us in our advising of institutions and also in our teaching of these principles to others.